Hi, Bobby Halton here for Unimac. Now, Unimac knows there's no price that you can put on a life, including ours. Being proactive with our health and safety is non-negotiable. To protect us against cancer-causing carcinogens, we need more than just clean gear. You need a total solution with the best equipment, the best technology, and the best training. That's why the good folks at Unimac partnered with an NFPA-authorized independent service provider to offer certified training on NFPA 1851 standards. When it comes to keeping us safe and healthy, demand the total package. Get training details at unimac.com/safety. That's unimac.com/safety.
Well, welcome to Behavioral Health with Dr. Beth Murphy. And tonight we're going to be starting out with me because she didn't want me to say this on the radio, but she got locked out of her office and she's trying to find somebody to let her back in. But we won't let her know that everyone in the world knows about this. And so we'll move forward a little bit to talk about some of the things I think that are important in the new reconnecting with the world after the mask mandate has been kind of lessened, I guess, by the Center for Disease Control this week, which is, I think, a good thing for us and society. But one little announcement about FDIC that will be in August 2nd in Indianapolis, Indiana, so the 2nd through the 7th. And Dr. Murphy will be there, but she won't be speaking. The attorneys will be there. I always have to put a plug in for the attorney guys. We'll be speaking at various times through the conference. And also, there are a number of hot classes over the weekend and in the beginning of the week. And then the regular classroom sessions will commence with world-renowned speakers talking about their various disciplines in the fire service. And hopefully you guys get to see, and gals get to see, as many of those individuals as you can. So getting into the mask mandate released, as Beth talked about before, Dr. Murphy talked about before, is the sort of psychological impact that masking and isolation pretty much has had on us as a society. And for us in the fire service, we have found ourselves, I think, more isolated than we have ever in the past, only because of the pandemic has been taking a number of firefighters' lives this year or last year as well. And after I reviewed the statistic last week for a class that I did earlier in the week of the 38 firefighters that died, about half of us passed away from COVID and COVID symptoms. So, you know, our masking policies, our immunization strategies, our hand washing policies and protocols actually are working, other than the fact that, you know, we do have a high mortality rate still, I think, in the United States, and the vaccine that has been administered by the millions now is finally taking effect, and we're seeing that sort of stuff. So yay for America, and yay for you guys that have found your way into getting the vaccine and keeping up the hygiene practices. And I see Dr. Beth Murphy, just stand by for a second. I see Dr. Beth Murphy on the line. Was just getting someone, or just giving him an update on the mask-free environment and shooting, or immunizations. And I told the whole world you get locked out of your office, so there you go. Explain that away, Dr. Murphy.
Oh, great.
Oh, good. Oh, what dashboard manager I am.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so how do I sound?
You sound good. You sound like you're in the hallway. You're sounding good. You're sounding like you're in the hallway.
Yes.
However, I understand what you're saying.
Oh, good. Okay. So I'm going to try and not talk too loud because you could probably hear that there's an echo here. So I'm basically sitting outside my office door so that I'm within range of my phone because I am talking on my watch. So that's where we're at right now. So I can't go any further away. And so I'm hoping I'm not going to be disturbing anybody that might be in the building, which I think my end of the building is actually pretty quiet right now. So, this is kind of humorous. And it ties in to what I was, thinking about talking about. And it's not really, like how to lock yourself out of your office. But, like what you do with that and how you get yourself to a place where you can manage yourself when you do find yourself in situations where you don't really have a lot of control. So as you can imagine, this is a bit stressful. It was just kind of that reason that I ended up locking myself out. I left all my stuff on my desk. I got a few minutes. I got to run and get water. And I had unlocked the inner door, but had not unlocked the outer door, which I totally forgot about. So I walked out in my ignorant bliss to get water so I could hurry back. And I'm at the end of the hall filling my water bottle and all of a sudden have this realization that, oh my God, I didn't unlock my outer door and I don't have my keys. So, so sometimes when you're, stressed and thinking about other things, something like slip and you forget. And sometimes it doesn't really matter and sometimes it can create a bigger problem. So, what do you do with that? And I know some people, like some of the first responders I work with, they've dealt with so many, crappy things at work and on the job that's the same thing in their personal life. And it's like they kind of lose that flexibility in thinking to kind of take things in stride. And so they might feel pressured, and in that moment of pressure, they might make a mistake. Hopefully not a life-threatening mistake, but a mistake nonetheless that it could be small and it could be stressful and or create more stress, and then they've just piled more on to, I would use an analogy of a backpack. So it's like, you just put another rock in the backpack. So, and for some people it could be enough to cause a total meltdown. And I think that I would have been one of those people at one time, but I've done a lot of work in the process of helping other people. I've learned a lot. Obviously, I've learned a lot to become a psychologist, but I've learned a lot. Oh, hold on. Hey, hold on. So, John, would you talk? Because I think I'm being rescued.
Oh, good. So rescue me guys are there? Is that what you're what's happening? Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well,
okay.
we'll listen to the rescue here on. We'll listen to rescue here on international blogcast radio, while Dr. Murphy gets access into her office, and the hero of the day is the maintenance guy, I'm sure, providing that access. Now,
right.
I know that Dr. Murphy wanted to get a Halligan, wanted me to buy her a Halligan tool for Christmas, which I didn't, and probably wouldn't be do her any good anyway because her car was locked, and so she couldn't get to it. So we'll give her a couple minutes to get
okay.
back online.
All right.
Are you in? Are you safe?
Okay, I'm going to hang up from my... Okay, yeah, I'm
okay.
hanging up from my watch so I can get on my my cell phone.
Okay.
So, so I will be right back. John, don't let there be dead air.
You're talking to an Irishman. All right, so no dead air. Dr. Murphy will be on in a second. But anyway, I just kind of want to just regenerate the conversation about what a great job the fire service is doing in masking, hand washing, and those sorts of things. In wearing my medical hat, there's been an interesting phenomenon that the flu this year has been pretty much at zero as opposed to other years. And a lot of it has to do with our hygiene practices that we have adopted in many sectors of our nation. Hand washing and masks, and so the question remains: is that will we keep those practices alive and keeping us alive and well by continuing to mask and to hand wash? The one of the issues I think that we'll talk about hopefully later is that sort of reentry into society after being isolated so long, and restaurants are opening up. As a matter of fact, Dr. Murphy and myself, I'm going to treat her to dinner tonight, not so much because she got locked out of her office, but it's a date night. It's Friday night. So, but it's interesting when you go into the restaurants, when you're coming in, you have to wear a mask. When you're sitting down and drinking and eating, you do not. And now with the CDC guidelines is that people who are vaccinated don't have to wear a mask, which I think for a lot of people is a revelation and a relief that they don't have to mask up again. But like myself, there is the opportunity to think twice about not masking up in a public forum. So I believe, and I'm thinking that we'll continue to mask for a period of time until the real effect of, non-masking, getting out into society and making a reentry into, the world we knew about a year and a half ago, finally regains itself as a steady eddy in our lives. So I see that Dr. Murphy is on. Hopefully I filled in no dead air. And I know that the Rescue Me component of your office place has worked. So you're back online.
Oh, great. Okay, so now how is the sound?
You sound like you're inside your office on your regular phone.
Perfect. Okay. that was kind of fun. So thank you again, John. So I could tell you went back to the mask. So
I did just briefly.
Okay. Basically, this is kind of about handling stress. So as I was saying before, it's humorous in a way that I locked myself out, because of the, what I was thinking about talking about. And, I didn't get, a chance to pull together all the things that I wanted to mention. And so I'm going to be referencing some research and research apps, tools, things like that. But and I'll have to present it later or put it in, I don't know where I can put it, but I want people to have whatever references. So I may not remember exactly what research it was, but
you know, there's a lot of research, and there's a lot of there are a lot of classes, there are a lot of apps, there are books, and it's all about resiliency, and that resiliency ties into like post-traumatic growth. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about in behavioral health and first responders. We've talked a lot about you know, signs and symptoms of PTSD and suicide, and you know, what does it look like, and how will you know, and how, you know, what do you do, how do you intervene? And you know, the one question that I get a lot is, well, maybe it's not so much a question. Not always a question, I'll put it that way, is that the reason that a lot of people don't speak up is that they see their struggle as a weakness. And their recognition that they're struggling really isn't a weakness. The fact that they're struggling isn't really a weakness. It's part of the reaction when you are overwhelmed, when you are carrying too much in your backpack. And, you know, what you carry in your backpack is, you know, large rocks, medium rocks, small rocks, filler. And so you can consider each rock as some sort of stressor. So you don't do the job in a vacuum. You do it along with everything you face in life and every experience you've had throughout your life. So the idea is that when you put rocks in your backpack, you're also taking rocks out. And so that kind of is where we go with resiliency. You know, it's like some people may have more resiliency, and that means that they'd be able to carry a few more rocks. But it's like everybody reaches that point where they've just had enough. And I mean, and that doesn't mean that everybody develops PTSD. And the fact is that a lot of people will, I mean, they could be struggling with depression or anxiety or just have I shouldn't say just because it's not a just, but you know, it's not everybody struggles to the level where they would meet criteria for a diagnosis out of the five, which is our, you know, that's the diagnostic manual. So some people as part of their stress reaction may have some of the symptoms that could be found in the DSM-5 and could be part of the diagnostic criteria. So maybe someone is struggling with post-traumatic stress and their symptoms, signs and symptoms are consistent with some of the criteria, but they're not there yet. They're not at the disorder part. But even if they were, that still doesn't mean that that's a life sentence. So anyway, but it's like, so it's normal for people to experience a variety of stressors. And it's normal to have a stress reaction. And it's normal that some of those stress reactions happen to fall under signs and symptoms that are listed in the DSM-5. And that would be true of everybody. So what makes a difference as to like where you might fall has a lot to do with your resiliency. So what does that mean? So basically, I've made the decision that I wanted to start doing more talks and more just like personal work and in teaching. I'm sorry, I need to take a drink. I'm very sorry. I wanted to start moving things more towards the positive aspect, towards that idea of resiliency and building resiliency and post-traumatic growth. And as I kind of started to say, is that with my experience this evening, this afternoon, is one of those examples where at one time, I don't think I would have handled it very well. I would have been much more reactive. And so it really was actually kind of interesting to observe myself in this situation, because I really wanted to be early and ready to go. And I wanted to have like my notes in front of me and have that level of preparedness so that I could be a bit more focused and calmer. And I noticed that getting locked out of my office, well, it did give me like a little panic. It didn't overwhelm me. And I think that was in part the result of the fact that I've actually been doing like daily meditation. It's something I used to do when I was younger. So when I was young, I was a competitive tennis player and tennis, softball. It was really athletic. And so I practiced various forms of meditation, as well as going and learning to do self-hypnosis to help with like getting like overstressed in competition. And it was really helpful. And, I was young, so I kind of took it for granted. Dabbled in it off and on, and, throughout my life. And then in school, I was reintroduced to meditation, to mindful meditation in particular. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. I read some of the research on it and I thought, well, this is good. I like this. And the fact is the research that is coming out related to meditation basically says that it can change the form and function of the brain. So exposure to stress, and particularly traumatic stress, that like having that exposure over time and constantly being activated, that can have a long-term impact on the brain's form and structure. And in fact, a lot of people may notice that, whether you have whether you've been diagnosed with a disorder or not, being on the job makes you a bit more responsive to certain stimulus. That's not abnormal. That would be normal. How reactive you are and how long you react, that's when problems start to build up. And so that means that there's some changes going on in your nervous system, essentially, and in your brain. Meditation and other things that might be similar to meditation can actually help that. I know that when I first left the fire service, my first office was just down the street from one of the fire stations that belonged to my city that I worked for. It was a station that I'd worked at, but not often. But I could hear it. So every time they got a call and it was something that needed lights and sirens, I could hear it. And I noticed that every time that happened, my heart rate would increase. And I would find myself wanting to jump out of the chair. And so that was kind of an interesting phenomenon. So, some people have that reaction and much worse, and to a lot of other different stimulus or triggers. So, you know, like over time and being exposed to it, that reaction started to lessen. So in that sense, I was not doing regular meditation at that time, but I was being desensitized to my reaction, which is like one of the treatments that's often common for like a PTSI, PTSD, whatever you want to call it. So prolonged exposure therapy is a type of therapy. And basically that means, you know, sitting in the moment where you have just been stimulated to have whatever physiological reaction you're having, which then that triggers all sorts of thoughts and emotions. So, you know, recognizing that, sitting in it and being uncomfortable. And that's essentially, you know, what I was doing when I was working down the street from the firehouse. So over time, hearing the sirens did not cause the same physiological response that it used to. So that, you know, that was one thing. And it was knowing that, well, that's going down the street and I'm here, I'm not there, and I'm here and now I'm present in the moment, which is a big part of like mindful meditation, is having that presence in the moment. So that was something that over time that changed. And so and it's possible that any reaction that you may have developed to various stressful exposures, you could see them decreased by sitting in the moment and feeling that and recognizing that that was from a past stimulus that you no longer operate under. And that's one of the things that meditation can help you be in the moment and sit with that uncomfortableness. So it was kind of like this process for me, because I didn't actually go back to meditation until a couple months ago, and a regular practice of it. And it's like, and I knew because I read the research, so I knew what it did, and I knew why it worked to some extent, but I wasn't, I really wasn't into the physiology and the neurobiology and the overall neural science of it all. So that's something that I've been learning. So this all plays into like developing greater resiliency, and then also into like making meaning of things. So I've said before when I've talked about resiliency that it has, there's a lot that goes into it, but it's like I look at it in three, like having three main factors. You know, one of them is flexibility, one of them is learning, and one of them is adapting. And part of adapting is, I mean, that's where you're making that meaning, because then it kind of becomes part of how you make sense out of yourself, your environment, the interactions within that environment. So that becomes an important part. And I've discovered that meditation is one of those things. It's the easiest, simplest thing that you can do that can have the biggest impact on those things. It, in general, it can make you feel calmer. So not everything is an emergency. And when your system is used to responding to emergencies with that really big, it's not so much like in the fire service, you're not really experiencing, you know, the fight, flight, freeze, or friend. It basically is, you know, you're trained to respond and to go fight whatever it is. You know, you're gonna go to that aid call, you're gonna go to that fire, but you're basically ready. And so you get that that shift in your brain, and then you're excreting all sorts of neurohormones that then cause a cascading effect through your body that basically is meant to get you ready to fight. So, you know, the heart rate increases, your respiration increases, your body does what it's supposed to do. I should say your brain triggers your body to do what it's supposed to do to ensure your survival. And because the brain and body are triggered so often, some people live in that heightened state. And I would say like a lot of people do, unless you do something to bring you back down to your baseline, your homeostasis. So then you're reacting and acting consistently with the threat, if you will, that is before you, that triggered that response in the first place. So if you've been exposed over and over and over again to various stressors of various severity, then and not having a lot of downtime or rest in between or ability to reset, or you don't have the tools to reset, then it doesn't take a lot to trigger that stress response. So like me getting locked out of my office today, there was a time when that would have really been stressful and I would have had a hard time recovering from it. But the meditation that I have been doing kind of allowed me to stay a little bit calmer, obviously not perfectly calm, but I was able to stay under like my, I guess like my, I'm going to call it a stress threshold, because they're, you know, stress and stress response, that's normal. It's part of our survival. It's an innate mechanism. And when it kicks in, it allows you to operate optimally. And then, you know, everything is heightened. Like you can hear better, you could see better, you smell better. So all your senses are heightened. You're stronger, faster, you know, and you can actually, you know, fight or run a lot longer than you would otherwise. And that's exactly what is supposed to happen. That's what you want. But when you're stressed over and over and over and over again, and you're not coming back down to baseline, then your system is getting activated over and over again. And the lesser stressors are being felt as if they're big stressors. And I've talked about this before. I have a really great illustration of that, which I could show you. But you obviously can't see that through the radio, through the computer. But it's, you know, it's like when you're reacting to those little stressors as if they're big stressors, that would actually be fairly common for people experiencing stress over and over again. So that's something that I noticed today. And it's not like I really was, I guess it's like I hadn't noticed any real significant change in doing the meditation practice, because it's not like I'm doing a ton of it. You know, I mean, it's like most of the time it's it's, you know, like 10, 15 minutes before I go to bed. And it's been more of a personal experiment to, you know, see how it impacts my sleep and just, you know, just to kind of see. So I didn't have any real expectations of it. I mean, I know the research behind it, and I've been learning more about the neuroscience behind it. And so today was actually kind of unexpected. It was like I just had my first test run. And so, you know, I was able to keep my brain engaged. So, yes, I was a little I felt stressed. I was a little bit out of sorts and upset, but I didn't feel like there was anything happening that I couldn't overcome, I guess. You know, like I recognized that I locked myself out, and getting back in, there was nothing I could do to try and track down somebody who could come let me out. So, or no, not let me out, let me in. So my brain engaged rather quickly with a solution. And my and I noticed that I didn't get overexcited. So like my heart rate didn't really jump up. I didn't notice it. I was still breathing normally, and so it was really interesting to watch that. And that's one of the things that I've always told my clients, and I have talked about it before, but doing things like meditation is something that it really works. And it's not like it works in the moment. It's like you need to practice it every day. And then the effects are felt like over time. So I've had a lot of people that I've suggested meditation or relaxation breathing, and then they will come back and tell me, well, I used it. Like I got anxious or I got triggered and I used it. And they would say it helped a little bit, or I didn't notice it helping. And so they're using it as a in-the-moment tool rather than this is a, I guess it's more than a tool. It's almost like a change in lifestyle. So it's a commitment to yourself, and you practice it, and it becomes part of your lifestyle. So that it's not so much about like I'm going to get stressed out, so now I'm going to like use my breath. It's that you experience stress, but you don't get stressed out, and so it just really kind of blows my mind. And this is something that I know, Bonders, because I've seen the research, and I know that a lot of treatment programs incorporate stuff like meditation or mindfulness, and it might be active mindfulness where you're just present and focused in what you're doing, or it could be, you know, like more of a traditional meditation, like transcendental meditation where you're sitting quietly, clearing your mind, and focusing on some mantra, or doing relaxation breathing where your attention is focused on breath, but still remaining present. And then yoga. Yoga is another thing. And so these are all showing up big time in various treatment programs for PTSD. And there's more and more research that comes out on that. And it's like, and I knew it worked, but I hadn't really experienced it for myself in a long time. And so today was very interesting to me that I really noticed that how I would have responded at one time wasn't there. And that actually felt really good, and that reinforces my desire to continue with practicing meditation. You know, John and I know there's a guy that we were friends with, him and his wife, I can't remember. It was like Larry and Carol, I think. Yeah, Larry. And Larry actually did some teaching at various conferences where we would be at. And he meditated and he had a regular schedule. And so rather than, I mean, it seemed, and I wasn't around him all the time, but it seemed like, you know, he had this schedule and it's like life revolved around him and his self-care rather than his self-care revolving around what happens in life. So he was putting himself first. And I know that, you know, John and I witnessed some of that, you know, like we ran into him at an airport and we were both waiting to fly to a conference and he was a Delta Club member. And so he invited us to come into the Delta Lounge. That was pretty cool. Then he excused himself to go find a corner so he could meditate. And he went off for 30 minutes and then he came back. And then they invited us over to dinner one time. And we went over at the time that they asked us to come. And he excused himself and he went off and meditated. And then 30 minutes later, he came back. And, you know, and I told the story to somebody and they said, well, maybe it's because you stress him out, which I laughed because, you know, it did seem like my experience was every time we showed up, he went and meditated. So, I mean, I suppose you could draw that conclusion. But I know that meditation is a big part of his self-care and he's probably one of the most balanced people that I've ever come across. And his, that self-care ritual was very, very important to him. And I've seen too often how when people get overstressed, like it with work, with life, with whatever it is, they will let go of those things that they do that make them feel better, feel balanced, feel grounded, feel connected, feel calm. And so it's important to prioritize yourself. And I believe that people who are more resilient, they do that. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. It is that you are a person and you're expected to respond to all sorts of different emergencies, whether it's work or home. And all those things have an impact on you. And how much of an impact really depends on, like, what your baseline is. And your baseline depends on how you take care of yourself, what you do to bring yourself back to your baseline. And you know, and the more resilient you are, the closer you are operating to your baseline. And that means prioritizing yourself. So part of the reason why I got on this kick, well, there are several reasons, but one is I was kind of getting burned out in talking about like all the bad stuff. And I've always questioned, you know, are we doing first responders a disservice by talking and focusing on PTSD and suicide? Because the fact is that the stress reaction, like reacting, having a reaction to the variety of stressors that you face in life from the job and personal life is, it's normal. I mean, if you're not reacting to stress, then I think we have a whole bigger problem. So having a stress reaction to stressful things is important. Recognizing that, I guess it's like recognizing that you're exposed to stressors that not everybody is exposed to. That's good. It doesn't make you any better or any more special or any less human. It means that you train for those particular things. And that means also training your brain and your mind to react to those things. And back to something that we talked about last time, which was the stress inoculation training. So that plays into it also. So it's kind of anticipating that you're going to have these reactions to certain events, and then training to that and knowing that you can respond to that. I think that when I talked about it before, the one thing that was left off that I think really makes a difference is like being able to make some meaning out of whatever the result is, because you can have the best training and react the best you possibly can, and there can still be a bad outcome. And so that can eat at people if you don't have a way of handling that. And making meaning out of something doesn't mean that you're looking for the silver lining or you're gonna, you know, make lemonades out of lemon. So, but it is finding a way to kind of incorporate that into your, I guess, your database, so that in the future, if you're faced with something like that, you have useful information, and then that can help you in that moment, and then not build up and overwhelm you. So that one thing is about wanting to kind of change what we're talking about, because the other part of that is that I really believe, as I, you know, I continue learning, is that our mindset is really important. And our mindset is, you know, again, it's like how you make meaning of things, how you understand things, and how you talk about it. I mean, that plays a big role. So if we're constantly telling first responders that they're exposed to really horrible things and that they are going to get PTSD, then we're basically setting them up to look at what they do as experiencing really horrible things and that they will get PTSD. I mean, that becomes part of their personal narrative. And so it's like, yes, you experience things that most people don't experience. And those are things that will probably stick with you and you will remember for the rest of your life. I mean, so the job and what you see, it does change you or shape you in some way, but you do have control over what you do with that and how it's going to change you and shape you. And I don't think that we get that information out there enough. And that doesn't mean that the people that are overcome with what they are dealing with, what they've seen, what they're managing, that doesn't mean that they're weak. You know, so like a stress reaction is just, it's a stress reaction. It's not a weakness. Having lingering effects from those reactions, it's based in physiology and in neurobiology. And it doesn't mean you're weak. I mean, having a reaction and wanting to run away or fight doesn't mean you're weak. You're reacting to what you're being presented with in the moment. And so you get to choose what you do with that. What you do and how you do it, it depends on your previous experiences. It depends on all those rocks in your backpack. So if you've been taking care of then you're not going to have as heavy a backpack. So it might be a little easier for you to deal with something that you're faced with than somebody that maybe has a whole lot of rocks in their backpack. Because even the strongest person is going to crumble eventually. And a resilient person may find themselves falling to their knees when their backpack is overloaded And it doesn't always have to be the big rock that is the last thing that they can carry. It can be something really small. But then again, it comes back around is, what do you do with it? Like, how are you going to empty out those rocks? And so what you choose to do then becomes really important. So some people, because they really feel that having a stress reaction and feeling a longer-term impact from that is a sign of weakness, and so they might try and cover it up. So then they quit talking about it, and then that leads talking to people, so they start to lose their connectivity. They might start to drink a little bit more. There's a reason why alcohol is called liquid courage. And so it's like, well, that could help in the short term, but it's not a long-term solution, and it can make things a lot worse, and it can also be something that you put in the backpack. So it's important to, know yourself and to recognize what stresses you out and to start putting yourself first and to pay attention to the story you tell yourself. So you see things, you do things, you interact in certain ways, and you deal with everybody's problem, including your own. And so not actually facing those things is really not the solution. So you have to face those things, and sometimes it requires that you make connections with people to help you. Sometimes it means trying something new. I can't tell you how many times I've suggested relaxation, breathing, and meditation, and watched my client roll their eyes because it just is hard to wrap your brain around the fact that something so simple could have such a huge impact. And that's where I really started to learn more. So I've been listening to podcasts on neuroscience. And I found that the best way to change mindset is to get knowledge. And so the more you know, like if you know why, you can know the why. And the how, like how do you go from experiencing various stressors to PTSD or depression? The more you know about that, the more you understand your own stress response, and the more you know your own limits, the better you will be, the better armed you are. And with that knowledge, you can change your mindset about it. And mindset is huge. And this is one of the things that, like in these podcasts with like the various neuroscientists that I've been following, this is something that they talk a lot about. The first time I was introduced to that idea was like years ago when I was listening to, it was Kelly McGonigal, and I've mentioned her before in my show. Her TED Talk on how to make stress your friend was kind of the beginning of my journey into learning more about mindset and then starting to steer towards neuroscience, which I wish I had been more into neuroscience when I first got into school. It probably wouldn't have changed my path, but my understanding and all my tools and such would be slightly different. But she talks about being a health psychologist and for years talking to people about how stress will, and then she started reading research on mindset and completely changed her view on stress. And basically she cited a study that had been done, and it was a longitudinal study, and it was following people after like through I think like four or 5 years, and basically it was, you know, asking what their attitude on stress was. And she had said that the study reported a significant finding of people who thought stress would kill them actually killed them. So their mindset around stress being bad, it impacted them. And so they and a number of people like had heart attacks, some people had strokes, but the mortality rate was definitely higher in that group than the people who believed that stress made them stronger. And so that started like the beginning of her journey. And so she's done a lot around that. And then she cited other studies around mindset. And what we think and what we do with that has a huge impact. And that's something that I've really been exploring. And so understanding the neuroscience behind what happens when we experience various stressors and what our body's doing. And basically our body's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's helping us survive situations that, that when our mechanism was like first created, that's not the danger that our brain and that fight flight mechanism was designed to deal with, but it does its best. And so it has a particular reaction to everything. And it triggers that release of the neurohormones, which creates that cascading effect of neurochemical changes in the body. And it all has the purpose of helping us survive. It has nothing to do with how well we survive. So that's up to us. That's up to what we do with ourselves after. So we can be like those people that believe stress is harmful and will kill us, which is kind of in line with being a first responder and seeing all those terrible things is going to give you PTSD. Or it could be, well, stress triggers the response in your body that it's supposed to do, and that's there to protect you, and I have control over what I do with that, which is pretty simplistic, and I'm pretty sure the way I'm explaining it really is, and I'm probably missing a few steps. But that's basically what we're getting at. And so it's like, so how do you build this resiliency? How do you shift your mindset? And that's kind of a big question. It's something that I would like to see. I would like to learn more about it. I would like to share that information, and I would like to help other people do that very thing, to understand their stress response, understand the purpose of it, to recognize that shift, why it happens, and then once they understand, well, the why and the how, then you can start to make some changes, which that brings me to like this, I'm actually listening to podcasts that one of them was a neuroscientist, and she took a break. she needed to like take a hiatus for a short time for, I think it was just like kind of like a lot of, she was experiencing a lot of stress, and she had to choose what she was going to let go. I listened to her podcasts are really great and informative. The person that I've been listening to most recently, which is really interesting and fascinating, is Andrew Huberman. So if you want to learn more about neurobiology, neuroscience, I would recommend that you listen to him. So I've been listening to him, and I haven't gotten to the part where I've been wanting to write things down, like the key points, and then to look into the research that he cites. And so everything he talks about is based in science. And listening to him talk about the neurobiology, the neuroscience, how the brain is working, the how memories are created, how they're stored, it really makes a lot of sense in the context of what I know from psychology about like experiencing various stressors and then how that can impact a person and PTSD. And it really gives me a lot of hope that we can do a much better job with first responders in getting them prepared and helping them heal. Too many first responders who have been diagnosed with PTSD have gone through treatment. They've gotten the message that that PTSD is for life and that they're damaged and that they will always be damaged. And that is not the message that you get from the science. And the research on it now really points to that, well, this is an injury and you can heal from it. And I believe that understanding the mechanism to how this happens and how it impacts you gives you the information you need so that you can start shifting your own mindset and you could start changing and healing and incorporating things like meditation. Meditation is great. And I've used it more and more, and I honestly was a bit surprised by my whole reaction today, because what happened today would have been something that would have, I think, had a more lasting impact, and it would have been harder to shake, to kind of shake it off. So what I'm going to do is I'm wrapping up here. So I want to give you a couple things so that you can go and look for yourself. And I promise that I am going to like outline all this a little bit better and be able to cite things more specifically so that you can, walk away and feel like, oh, I could do this. I could make these changes. So one is, I really encourage you to check out the podcast by Andrew Huberman. And he also, he records his podcast. So he records them so you can listen to them on, through iTunes. Or you can watch him do his podcast through YouTube. In all his stuff, he cites studies. He puts links in for various things that he talks about that he suggests that you try. So it's like even if you don't listen to all of it, he also puts timestamps on it. So I just brought it up so I could look at it. So if you're listening to one of his podcasts and you're really interested in something that he's talking about, you can actually go into the notes of the podcast or on YouTube, and he will list out a timestamp. So you could go back in and you could go to exactly what you want to listen to get more out of it. And then you can always go into it to find links to the studies that he's referencing or tools that he's referenced. And he also, he mentions meditation being really important. And so he references Headspace, and some of you may recognize it and may have tried it, but that's a popular meditation app And I'm a big believer in apps, especially if you are just starting. Well, I think whether you're starting out or you're seasoned, the apps can be really useful because you can set a timer. So you have that reminder, and then the meditations, or some of them are actually guided hypnotherapy. So you're essentially doing self-hypnosis on those things. You can pick like a topic. And so basically that's the intention. And that's something that's very important when you're doing meditation. It's having some intention, and it could be something like, it could be simple. I mean, it could just be like feeling happier, feeling more balanced, and acknowledging like in all the ways that you do feel that way or you do have that quality. So I recommend listening to him. His talks are about an hour and a half, and he even explains why an hour and a half, which is actually pretty interesting. And so I recommend him. And then for apps, he recommended Headspace. I've tried it. I like it. The one that I've been using most recently is called Breathe, and it's B-R-E-E-T-H-E. And I really like that one. And then I've had clients use 10% Happier. There's one that is called, what is it called? Stop, Think, and Breathe. If you're not quite there with the meditation, but you can do the like relaxation breathing, which honestly, it's like when you focus on breath, you're essentially meditating. That one, there's one that I always recommend, which is called Breathe 2 Relax, and it's Breathe the number 2 Relax. I mean, there are so many apps out there now. It's just phenomenal. So pretty much anything that you want to do. And then most of those have a subscription, but they'll give you an option to use them for free. And I tell people, it's like, well, use it, try it. If you don't like it, then don't get it. Don't use it. There are also a variety of things that you can find on YouTube if you want to find something guided there. So, you know, my recommendation is explore. And we have all this amazing technology, which could be a whole nother topic because the technology can hurt you or help you. But in this sense, it's like it can help you. So explore your apps, explore YouTube, check out the podcast, and pick something to get started with. It doesn't have to be huge, but doing something small every day will have a huge impact down the road. And I really believe that, like, my experience today was, I mean, for me, definite evidence that I didn't have to do a lot. And it made a big difference. Like I was just opening my app to see, it always tells me like, congratulations, you've done this many days. So I've had on this particular app, I've had 22 days. It tells me I've done 4 days in a row and my longest streak was 5. So obviously I've like missed a day. Sometimes it's because I've used another app. Sometimes it's because I might not have done it that day. But I've done it more often than I haven't. And I really have noticed a difference. And I know that the research is there to support, it supports using this. There are also apps that you can use for recording your, you know, thoughts or tracking emotions. And that's another place I get a lot of eye rolls when I suggest journaling. And I get it. I am not a journaler. I used to be, sort of. I actually just like to collect really cool looking journals. And they never write in them because I don't want to mess them up, which my daughters find immensely humorous. So that's something else. It's like if you got stuff stuck in your mind, if you're ruminating on something, you can't get thoughts out of your head, writing them down is a great way to do it. And meditation is a great way to deal with it too. And people are like, but I can't quiet my mind. And you don't have to. I mean, like TM, Transcendental Meditation, is one of those that over time, when you practice it, you will get that kind of clear mind effect. But mindful meditation is a bit more forgiving. And it really is about noticing all the thoughts that you have. And I remember my first experience, but my first like kind of guided experience at the beginning of a practice during my internship, I had this amazing revelation that I have so many thoughts going through my head. And that in and of itself is really powerful. We have a lot of thoughts. And there's actually research on this. 80% of those thoughts are negative. And we have a tendency to believe them, which is also part of our innate survival mechanism. So again, it's like learning why we respond, how we respond to different stressors can give you the freedom and the power to make some changes. So you can choose to believe those negative thoughts, or you can choose to follow the positive thought. Or you can choose, in the case of when you're meditating, to let them float on by. And when I do it, I notice my thoughts on clouds. So I have fluffy little white clouds going through my mind. And that can be different for everybody. So that's basically it. That's where I want to go with everything. I want to move more towards like a solution to helping promote understanding of why, how somebody has gotten to the point that they are. It's not a fault in design. You know, it's like your brain and your body is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. The brain and body was not meant to respond to stress after stress after stress after stress. And so it's important to find, to recognize what it does in you and to find solutions that will help you better unload some rocks. And you have that capability. I mean, I could say, if I can do it, anybody could do it. And I know some people are like, yeah, but you're a psychologist. Well, I'm human. And I know what it's like to be a firefighter. And I remember what it was like to be a firefighter. And I've seen people struggle, like both at work when I was working with them, myself included, and as a psychologist. And so this is a constant learning practice. And that basically is what life is that you learn. You be flexible, you learn, and you adapt. And that's what I want to help people do. So I really want to move towards this more positive, you know, kind of like, this is what we can do. This is how we get better. And you're not stuck. PTSD, if you struggle with PTSD, is not a life sentence. But understanding it and understanding how it operates in you is the first step towards getting your life back. So that's it for me. I'm going to try next time to have more like specific references, because I really believe that knowledge is power, and that's what I want to give you. So I am done And thank you very much for listening and bearing with me through my getting locked out of the office. All I can do is laugh about that. And I hope you all have a good night, a good day, a good morning, whenever you're listening to this. Thank you very much.